Thank you very much for joining us again today on this edition of Impact Africa podcast series on Faithless Radio.
My name is Vanessa Okamaka-Richard. Okay, today I have joining me an outstanding African who's really making impact. I have Emmanuel Agunze, the founder of Makoko Dream, an initiative that provides solutions to the United Nations Sustainable Developmental Goals of no poverty, zero hunger, good health and well-being, quality education, gender equality, clean water and sanitation, affordable and clean energy, decent work and economic growth. The list is endless. And I'm so pleased to have him join me on this podcast today. And what we're looking at is the faith or the hope of slums in Africa. Thank you very much, Emmanuel, for joining me.
Hi, it's a privilege to be here. And I hope this interview gets to inspire somebody to take a stand for whatever they believe in.
All right. So thank you very much once again. Now, let's go into the discussion proper without any further ado. First of all, I'd like to find out, I know we've had the discussion off the camera, off air, but I really like to find out, and I know the persons out there who have heard about Makoko Dream, Emmanuel Agunze, the Makoko Prince, would really love to know what actually inspired this initiative. How did it come about? Can you tell us?
A lot of things. I think the most important thing is the fact that I believe a child is not responsible for this decision of the parents, and as such should not be made to bear the consequences of the decision of the parents. It's sad that a child is labeled poor when the parents are poor, and labeled rich when the parents are rich, even though the child does not have the same, those things. So for me, it is basically about ensuring that children have a voice, and voice the voice through the platform of education. I believe everyone can dream for greatness if they give it a platform of education. But I was simply looking at what can I do to better my community. And then coming to Makoko community, I saw a whole lot of things. I saw underage children, 13, 14 in the family way. I saw young boys going into crime, a whole lot of things. And you know, the normal thing that will happen to one person or to a person when you see such things is start thinking, oh, they are like this because they are rats, because they are this. But then I'm like, once you give a person an alternative, you cannot just condemn the person as to being that they've not made an effort. So I was looking at what exactly can I do to leave my footprint in the sands of time in the community of Makoko. And being a teacher from a teaching background, before I went to school and studied architecture, I thought that, oh, we can focus more on education because it's a transformational tool that can make a child to dream for greatness. And we started basically to just help one child to see that education is key. And yeah, that's how it has been.
Okay, so for how long has this this initiative been on for now?
It's a whole lot. Okay, officially, it started March 1st, 2016. Although projects or major projects commenced January 1st, 2017. So officially we're 5 years, but in terms of project-wise, we're barely 4 years plus.
Okay, well, that's good. That's impressive. So how far has it been? What I really love to hear about the various success stories you've recorded with these children, because I saw a documentary about children living in that area. Even the houses there, the state of that environment is not really too good. I was almost moved to tears, I must confess, because the situation there was not really bearable for someone to stay. So how has the progress been, the success you have made with this initiative?
Okay, personally, I feel poverty is first a thing of the mind before about lack of resources. So if the mind can be developed to think resources and not lack, then poverty has been dealt with 50%. So in terms of that, what we started with was basically doing a whole lot of mental reorientation. One of the things that happens in communities like that is that there's always an entitlement mentality where they feel like somebody is going to come and save them. And one of the things I started was to say that, hey, nobody's going to come and save you like you can save yourself. Whatever they're going to come and do, if you're not as interested in making it work, it's not going to work. So those were the first things we were looking at. And for that, the progress has been really impressive. And in the sense that Makoko Dream is fully run by volunteers. Even the school is run by volunteer teachers. And they are all indigenous residents in Makoko community. And it was intentional. The idea was Makoko community can only be developed by Makoko people. If they're not as excited as developing their community and waiting for one savior of the world to come there, it's going to end in tears, as it has always been over time. And so far, we've been able to inspire 1, 2, 3, and over 20 to 40 of the Makoko youths to buy into this vision of, you've gone to a level of schooling, come let's train you as teachers to teach the next generation in Makoko. You may not be paid salaries as a salary earner, but you're volunteering and you will be paid stipends enough to take care of you. So that mindset shift of wanting others to do for them without them doing for themselves is one progress that we've made. The other progress I can say is in terms of girls and involvement in school, Makoko is a very funny community. It's a community that's patriarchal and at the same time matriarchal. It's patriarchal in the sense that things go through the men. Okay. But matriarchal in the sense that the women are in charge of economic power in terms of business and everything. So, and because it's basically patriarchal, a whole lot of families would rather sponsor the boy child than the girl child. And we were trying to correct that, but at the same time, not try to make the boy child think that they are not important. So for us, it was a case of whether you're a boy, whether you're a girl, just come to school. And if you're a boy and you encourage more girls to come to school, you get to have more incentives. That was just a way to make people understand that regardless of your gender, education is for everyone. As far as you have the gray matter, you can do something with your mind. And interestingly, we had our first set of primary school students that graduated last year through this year, and there were 12 of them and 11 were girls, right? So it was a testament to the fact that even without just going for girls, our strategy of ensuring that anyone who is ready and willing to learn came to our school tuition free, and 11 of them are now in secondary school, the first in their family to be in secondary school. You know, those are achievements that we look at and say, yes, we did something that is history, that's great.
Okay, wow, that's very commendable, very, very impressive. But okay, let's take it beyond Makoko, because I know that one of the mission or the vision that you have is to ensure that this extends to other parts of Nigeria than Africa. Now, let's even look at the possibility of ending slums, having an Africa or cities in Africa without slums. Now, from what you've been able to do so far, do you think it can be replicated in other places where we have slums? Do you think it's possible to come into a city? Because most of these slums, you find them in the urban areas, not even in the rural areas. Is it possible to come into a city and not find slums in these cities?
Well, I think the very first thing is, it's possible, but are people going to do the work? I really don't think so. I think the first thing or the first step is for people to become humans first. You know, we've gone through a whole lot of learning that we need to unlearn and relearn. We've added religion, we've added tribe, we've added bias, we've added race, we've added ethnicity, we've added so many things. If we do not unlearn those things to first be humans, we will not even have any place of helping people. And why I say this, if for instance, the thousands of graduates that don't get jobs decide that they're just going to freely and voluntarily go to a school without NYSC posting or anything, I say they're going to teach for just 2 hours a week, how much impact would that be? So I think that's the very first step for that kind of act to be done. So for instance, if there's a slum beside a person's place, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 persons say, okay, I may not be able to take care of 1,000 children right now, but let me go to that one child who cannot afford school fees, and I can't pay the person's school fees, but let me teach the child what I know so the child can learn what we call, or what is called in the US, homeschooling. A lot of change would occur. So is it possible? Yes, it can be. And we have the blueprints for anyone who is interested in making it happen. But is it doable right now? Until these things I said are made into play, it may not really be it. So for us, what we are trying to do right now is something we call Slum Out Makoko. So Slum Out Makoko is basically to empower as many persons who are in slum areas or live around slum areas who want to do something like what we've done in Makoko out there. And the reason why we call it Slum Out Makoko is because even though Makoko is not the largest slum in Africa or in the world, because the largest slum in Africa is in Kimberia slum, but it is the largest floating slum in Africa and in the world. So to an extent, people understand Makoko as a slum and want to make that as a good thing for slums all over Nigeria and Africa. And basically what we're going to do is tell and teach people how they can start from scratch, reach out to people, engage the stakeholders, meet them, and execute the results. And we hope that goes well. And yeah.
All right. Let me go back a little bit. I don't know how long you've been in Makoko. I want to believe that you have experienced certain things firsthand. And I also believe that when, in the course of this podcast, the reason why this podcast is here is to actually bring forth these problems to the open and let people begin to know that there are problems like this, and it can only take collective action for these problems to be sorted out. So let's even look at some of the themes that thrive in this slum, some of the ills that thrive in the slums, maybe amongst the young people, amongst the children or the families in these areas. Let's look at the ills, and then we can now look at some of the health implications or the health challenges that individuals in these areas face. Let's start from the first one.
The ills or the health challenges?
The ills first.
Well, strangely, Makoko is not what people think they are.
Okay.
They are actually a very resilient people. I think that was one of the things that drew me to Makoko. They are people that, despite their poverty and lack and things like that, they are happy people. And it's really fascinating for me. So what I started doing was to tell the good stories in Makoko and not just tell people the sad stories of, oh, they are poor, oh, they are this and they are that. They are rich people in Makoko. The problem is many of them, when they work, they don't know how to maintain resources because they sell fish, and fish is a good business. And one of the things I found out was that despite the poverty and everything in the Makoko community, not one child has died out of hunger or kwashoko. Not one child. Yes, some children may have died out of malaria, diseases here and there. That's very true. But not one child has died out of hunger. And the reason is because, despite the fact that somebody in a family can be hungry, the other family that may not have so much will not allow that family or that child to die just because they don't have food to eat.
So there's more like communal living there.
Yeah, that's just communal living. And that's one of the things I was like, oh, there's something that can be shared around the world, and this is something that can happen because it has effectively happened in Makoko, which is over 150 years old. So for the ills, they're just basic ills that any slum community faces. Teenage pregnancy, children doing drugs when they don't have any other thing to do, children roaming the streets, fathers marrying more than one wife, and wives giving birth to several children, smoking of fish, which is pure carbon monoxide, affecting the children. So there's yellowing of eyes, not good water system, and so there's a whole lot of rashes and children, things that slum communities face and associates. But to me, I think what is particular about them is the fact that despite all these things, despite the ills and all, they are people that are ready to make a change. And that's really what I see.
Okay, I think you've answered the book questions in one. Okay, well, that's good. Let's talk about the children there. I think one of the things I said I'm going to talk about is the fate or the hope for these children at the end of the day. According to the research that I saw, as of 2010, it was, according to UN Habitat, they estimated that over 200 million people were living in slums in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa. Now, that was in 2010. And this is 2021. That's about 11 years down the line. And I know that this population must have increased significantly. Let's look at the children there, because Africa has more of a youthful population. And this youth are actually the future of Africa. The question is there really hope for these individuals living in these slum areas?
Well, there is. And although it's not so certain, and that's why we do what we do, because Africa's problem is basically leadership. When leaders don't think of the future of the common man and think of just themselves, it's going to have a ripple effect, right? So for me, I think that's basically it. Once leadership is settled, then we can really do a whole lot in the African spectrum. And the other thing I think that can happen is you would become really human, so have humanity. You know, the American culture that I've been able to live in, they are not saints, but an average American is human. He thinks of the other person. He's open to help. And we lack that in our race in Africa. So usually one person gets there and it shuts the door for the others. Now, this is not to say that America is better than Nigeria, but if we can just imbibe just that little bit of humanity, then we can really, really, really do something about this. And I'll give you an example. In Makoko community, we have a lot of children who live on less than $1 per day. Banana Island is just about 45 minutes drive to Makoko when you go through Third Miller Bridge. An average house in Banana Island is about 500 million or thereabout dollars, which is like $1 million or more. So imagine how much would be needed, or how much money would help to ensure that a whole lot of Makoko people are taken out of poverty. Let's say they have 30,000 children. 30,000 times $1 is $13,000. $30,000 times 12 is just barely $360,000. You can take care of 30,000 children with one quarter or one third of the $1 million of house. And so many people have so much more than that in Nigeria. But what happens? They used to buy things that when they are dead, nobody even cares. So I think that's really it. Humanity. In the US, I found that over 40 to 60% of donations for NGOs come from individuals, not even corporates, not even big things, individuals. But in the African spectrum, our priorities are different. There's probably a big border in Nigeria, and so many people want to donate for their favorite stars, which is good because that's their money. But then there's a call for a child in one place and they're like, nah, I'm not the one that gave birth to the child. So The point is, if we cannot touch the garments of our humanity and really address that, we'll just be playing games. If Africa grows in terms of revenue by times 10 and times 20, and this humanity is not dealt with, this humanity portion is not dealt with, they will just be doing other things that are not relevant to this set of persons. Right? So I think that's basically it.
Okay. I was having a conversation with someone, and the person said that when we expect to be humans and do what they're meant to do, let's say for when the government that is expected to do what they're meant to do, provide good, affordable housing for these people in this area, or provide drinking water and also quality education when they're not doing it, then the persons who are this disadvantaged, they can actually do something for themselves. So I want to ask, is there anything that these individuals who are, in a sense, the victims, no, they're not really victims, but they are the ones disadvantaged here. Is there something they can do to alleviate themselves out of the particular situation that they are?
I think education, empowerment, and exposure. Education, because then they get to have a choice to choose which life they want to lead. Empowerment means they get to make the resources to choose that life well. And exposure to see that there's life outside Makoko. So those are three things I think. And those are things I'm actually working on. Education, we have the school. Empowerment, we once in a while empower people. We have two girls right now who were in partnership with another organization that have been sponsored in their GS3 to SS3. They wanted to drop out and this organization partnered with us to intervene. We have another set of two girls who are learning fashion design at an elite fashion design school in Ikeja, who waived off the school fees of over £500. So those are things we're doing to ensure that, apart from just being educated, you're empowered so that you have money, you have resources. Because if a girl lacks money, the tendency for her to sleep around is high. If a guy lacks money, the tendency for him to join bad gangs is very high.
Mm.
So if you can have your own money and use and have sense from being educated and everything, and you would not be looking forward to the right exposure. You're not going to be spending it on frivolities. You're going to spend it on things that would expose you and your talents, right? So we're expecting that with the education the girls are getting, and now in the fashion school from this, they're going to be thinking of, oh, when I'm done with this, I want to go for a fashion show. I want to be a top brand. They're not going to be thinking, oh, I'm going to buy the latest gadgets that they're not going to work something on. So basically, it's about education, exposure, and empowerment. If those three things are done properly, it will be so much easier to go out of poverty.
Breathe. Feel. Live. Love. Learn, grow in faith, and make an impact. Introducing the new faithflows.org app, a new kind of social network that is dedicated towards uplifting the well-being of individuals and communities around the world, where believers can connect, pray, learn new skills, teach, inspire others, listen to faith radio, and volunteer for humanitarian missions. Download the Faith Flows app today and start living your best life now.
Okay, well, let me ask this question. So where was Christianity come in all of these things, right? Hope for children in the slums. Where was God come into this? Because I like to ask this question as much as we want people to be humans and do things, and then even the persons with advantages can also do something. Where does God come in all of these things?
Well, I've always known this from youth, that God is the father and mother of all children. Parents, despite all their love and care, at best, they are caretakers. And the reason why I have this mindset is that God is the only one that is there for a child 24 hours, 7 times a week. The parents at best spend very little time. Teachers spend little time, but God is always there. So he is the father and mother of all children. So for me, I think it's more like I'm actually partnering with God to do his work for those children. And anyone who partners with God will always get paid, because God does not owe. So God is the father and mother of all these children, whether they are privileged children or underprivileged children, it doesn't matter. God is the father and mother of them. So for me, I think knowing that has helped me to see them in that light. So I don't see them as slum children, underprivileged children. I see them as my father's children. And the thing I would want my father's children to have is what I want them to have. So that's the mindset of the God factor for me in this place. And the second thing is the fact that, you know, I think I've made an example of the fact that you cannot judge your people until you're giving them an alternative. Just like how God will not come and rapture right now. No, because the word of God has not been preached to all the nations.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's like the word of God, until the word of God is preached to all nations and all people, God will not sound the trumpet. Why? So that nobody will say they did not hear it.
Mm-hmm.
It would be that they heard it, but did not act on it. And then his judgments will not be fair and not unjust. So basically, for me, it's that same commission to preach education and give people opportunity to know it, to hear it, and live it. So that in 20, 30, 50 years to come, the people who will have this opportunity did not take it and their lives are not as good as they wanted. It would be that I had given them the platform and the opportunity to better their lives, but they chose not to. Not that there was no platform and then I just expect them to do that. So that's basically how I see the interpretation of all these people, giving them an alternative. I think without trying to sound humble, there's no way I would have been able to do all I did without God. And I'll tell you several things. We've never had any major sponsor, or we've done several projects. Like we have a 200 word document of projects executed. So it's large. We're even thinking of making it into like a story. And that can only be because God is in it. Mm. We've never needed to beg for any partnership. Partnerships beg for us. That's because God announces his work. And all I just do is be the channel. And whatever is flowing from God to the children, as a channel, I get to be the first partaker of it, but it flows.
Definitely.
So it's, to me, it's basically about that. When I, as I said before, as I see them as how God sees them, I don't do it, let me just do them a favor. I'm not doing it as I'm trying to help them. No, I'm doing it as my duty because they are God's children, my father's children. That's the mindset.
Wow. I think if every one person in Africa, in the world, has this mindset that when they're doing something, they're doing it because it's their father's work they're doing, I think we'll have a better world. People don't do things because, okay, they are pushed to do it, but because they have gotten a revelation of what they're doing and then they're doing it. The other time, I think this is a little digression. I was having a conversation with someone after church and I told the person, Christ is not going to come today or tomorrow. Not because I was so sure. I told the person there are people out there that Christ will want to give a chance to hear him, to hear about him. He doesn't want these people to perish. And that's why he's not going to come today. Not because he doesn't want to come, but because there are people he loves so much that he wants to give a chance to come to him. The reason why I said this is because you talked about having to give people alternatives or give them a reason not to say that, okay, this is the reason why I did not do this. I did not amount to something because there were no opportunities. But really, this is commendable. And I must really commend what you're doing and commend the team that you're working with, the volunteers that are making this happen, because volunteers are very instrumental in making things like this happen. They're really very good in this, and I must commend them. I don't really have much questions again to ask you, but this is scary for me. This projection that Africa's urban population is going to triple in the next 50 years. According to the worldbank.org, it said on average, 60% of Africa's urban population is going to be in the slum when this population triple, right? So this is scary. But how do you see it? Do you think it can be averted? Because I know several times many of the prophecies or the predictions that were made for Africa but did not really come through. So what do you think about it?
I don't really have a problem with slum in terms of, they're in a slum community. I have a problem with slum mindset. Mm. So, for instance, there are so many people who are not living in Makoko who have worse mindset than Makoko people. They are always expecting what the government will do for them. They're always expecting what others will do for them. They are indeed, my uncle was not there for me. My this was not there for me. So they may not necessarily be in Makoko, but they still have that slow mindset. So for me, I think what Africa should focus more on is not really about taking people out of the physical slum, as it were, but taking people out of the mental slum. And why that is important is because you see a Jew may come to live in maybe Makoko. Because he's not having the mental slum, he will, within time, change himself, change the people around him, and start prospering because he understands wealth creation, right? So I think that's what Africans should be more interested in, because as far as slum is concerned, slum most times are, especially urban slums, are created when there are no adequate resources. Lagos is 70% water and 30% land. So we have 100% of people living in 30% land. So that means there's always going to be overpopulation in Lagos, right? And what that means is there will always be places around Lagos that will be slum communities because people cannot afford the island, the mainland, and all those high prices in Lagos. So the issue of slum in terms of physical structures may not end. But if the mindset of slum is taken away, whether they are living in shanty homes, they can still make it beautiful, right? They can still make it beautiful. They can make it healthy. They can make it somewhere someone can breathe. They can generate ideas to channel the black water and let it flow, and then the water is no longer black water. A whole lot of things can change if the mind is changed and transformed towards positive things, regardless of all the physical structures. When that is done, even the physical structures will now be altered. In the US, a whole lot of homes are still made of wood, but the wood is beautiful. So the problem of wood on water is not really the problem. In Indonesia, they have houses on water.
Of course, they do.
They're beautiful. In Vatican City, they have Venice, supposed mindset shift of Makoko, because Makoko is called the Venice of Africa. And Venice is built on water. So it's not really about the physical slum as it were, because for that, it's always be there. However, if the mind is developed, imagine we have a whole lot of creatives in Makoko who can put one or two engines together and make maybe a skating board that can move on water. If we have a whole lot of that, the problems that are in the area will turn to the solutions. So for me, I'm not really eager about whether that comes true or does not come true. That's just statistics. They are statistics for a reason. They are static. What I'm more interested in is what are the African leaders doing to ensure that they take away the mental slum from the people? But that is done. Regardless of where the persons may live, they will still have that mindset.
Wow. That's something. Okay, I think at this juncture, I'd like to say a very big thank you for joining me on this podcast. I sincerely appreciate. So far, I've been speaking with Emmanuel Agunze, the founder of Makoko Dreams, an initiative that's really doing amazing things with people, indigents, children, everyone present in Makoko, an island area in Lagos, Nigeria. You need to go visit Makoko and see what these people are doing there. Children are in school because someone decided to see, this is my father's business, I have to be about it. And thank God for the progress that we're seeing so far. And we believe that if this strategy, if this plan is replicated all around Africa where you have slums, then something good will come out of it. And if, like he said, if the mentality of the slum is taken away from the people living in the slum, you will find billionaires in the slums. Thank you very much, Emmanuel. Thank you very much. I really, really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. This person and his team are really doing so well. And if we have more of these individuals in Africa, things are going to turn around for people living in the slums. And I want to believe that there are other persons out there that are doing amazing things in the slums. We hope to connect with them in this podcast. But thank you very much. So let's do this again. And my name is Vanessa Okemeke-Richard, and you've been listening to Impact Africa podcast series on Faith First Christian Radio Station. I'll see you again. Have yourself a wonderful time. Bye.
Faith Flows is a nonprofit Christian organization. Support us today at faithflows.org/donate.